Welcome to Total Recast. I'm your host, Salem Monsoon, joined as always by my co-host, Vincent King.
Howdy, howdy.
If you're new to the podcast, or if you're like me and get blackout drunk on the regular, what we do here is simple. Kane and I pick a movie to rate, review, and discuss. If it's bad, we remake it, and if it's good, we leave it alone. Either way, we recast it, with the only rules being that if Bill Paxton is in it, no matter how big or small the role, we have to recast them, and that no actor or director can be used more than once within a 12-episode period. We affectionately refer to that as the Tom Hardy rule because we love him so much, we want to put him in everything. Now, with all that bullshit aside, hey, Kane, what movie are we recasting tonight?
For this Turkey Day special, we are recasting a Thanksgiving tradition, the 1987 road trip comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
During holiday travel, some people get delirious. Some get delayed. And some get Del Griffin.
American light and fixture, director of sales, shower curtain ring division.
Neil Page got all three.
I was on my way home to spend a nice holiday with my family. Instead, I'm in a motel bed with a stranger.
So instead of Thanksgiving with his family, he's spending 3 days with the turkey.
Two happy clams just whistling down the road.
Flintstones, meet the Flintstones, they're the Marconi family.
Paramount Pictures presents
Wilma!
Steve Martin.
Ever been to Hawaii?
Yeah.
You see Don Ho while you were there?
See the second show, that's the best one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
John Candy.
Why are you holding my hand? Where's your other hand? Between two pillows.
Those aren't pillows.
In a new film by John Hughes. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
See that Bears game last week?
Yeah, hello game, hello game.
Written, produced, and directed by John Hughes, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is a Thanksgiving-themed road trip comedy starring Steve Martin and John Candy. It's a three-day-long odyssey filled with comedic misadventures that was a departure from Hughes' teen-centric comedies of the time. While not a box office hit, it eventually became a holiday staple that's beloved by damn near everyone, which leads me into my question. But before we get into that, let me introduce our guest host for this episode, Mr. Marmaduke Carlston.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on to what is my podcast debut.
Yes. Happy Turkey Day. Well, not to you, Canadian.
Yeah. For you Americans, yeah, we had Thanksgiving about a month ago. The turkey has long since been digested.
Why do y'all celebrate in October again?
I couldn't tell you.
So you have Halloween, and when is it?
Thanksgiving is about the middle of October, usually the 12th, the 15th, and then yeah, Halloween's a couple weeks after that.
So y'all have two giant holidays, or are they just like whatever holidays for you guys?
No, Thanksgiving's a pretty big one. I mean, we get there's a day off, I believe. Yeah. And we have Halloween, and then the next big one is Christmas. I mean, we do Black Friday, but I think you guys do Black Friday right after Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah. Oh my god.
Sorry.
It's not, don't apologize for his jackassery. So is there any holiday in November for you guys?
Well, we have a Remembrance Day, which I think you guys call Veterans Day in the States. So So we have the day off for that. But like, you know, Thanksgiving is usually, you know, if you're in school or university, they kind of put the reading break there. So you have a whole week off. So
you lucky fucking Canucks.
Yeah. But it's snowing here. So are we that lucky? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, me and Kane are fucking sweating
brisk
balls.
81 degrees here. Holiday time. Middle of November.
Yeah, and it never gets cold here. So So let me get into my question, which is going to be Hughes specific. Which era of Hughes do you prefer? His kid movies, which would be Home Alone, Beethoven, and so on. His teen movies, which everyone knows, The Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Ferris Bueller's. Or his more adult fare, let's say, the bringing, She's Having a Baby, Planes, Trains, and so on and so forth.
The one with Bill Paxton.
Which one do y'all like? The one with Bill Paxton.
Weird Science.
There we go. Did you ever watch the show? I'm going to derail the conversation immediately.
No,
did you ever watch the show, Weird Science? I mean, ask the answer. No, moving on. I did not.
Oh,
they get around a season. It's one of those. It's like, oh, remember, like Ferris Bueller had a TV show.
Ferris Bueller had TV show one.
What's crazy is that how many you haven't heard of.
Well, the 80s had like it. Basically, if any 80s film did good at the box office, it either got an animated spinoff series or just a live action, like prime
Uncle
time.
Uncle Buck one. Has two TV shows.
Oh my gosh,
there's two TV.
I
shows.
I do remember that.
And it's like, why? Why it was a good movie, but really, he's just an uncle that fucks up the family for like a week and then he moves on.
Home Alone has like five sequels now. Like, how many times are you going to leave your kid at home by himself? So,
that is actually perfect synchronicity, I guess you would say, because this drops like the day after the newest Home Alone dropped on Disney Plus. And you know, so
the new Home Alone's been out for like a week.
Has it really?
Yeah.
Well, goes to show how little I give a shit about that.
Right. I barely even knew that it was existed until like a month or two ago when we recorded a movie where we casted somebody in, and I happened to be looking at their IMDb and I'm like, oh, there's a Home Alone whatever new show. I'm like, what?
Yeah. What episode was that?
It was
9 to 5.
That's right.
9 to 5. Because yeah, I remember you guys were talking about that. And you guys are just so disappointed by all the actors.
Except for the actual Home Alone kid.
Took that.
It's the little chubby kid from Jojo Rabbit. So I was like, oh,
yeah.
He's great.
Yeah. He's got Home Alone. And then the guy who played, what is his name? It's not Jojo Rabbit. Who's the main blonde haired kid? What's his name in that movie? Is it Jojo Rabbit?
They call him Jojo.
Yeah. Jojo Rabbit. He's got Silent Night with like Keira Knightley coming out in December.
Well, let's just say did you really think the chubby kid from that was going to be a movie star?
He was a scene stealer. Like I wasn't thinking he'd get any like lead roles, but I thought, you know, if there was a, you know, comedy with a bunch of kids, he would definitely be like the funny.
Yeah,
funny fact,
yeah, usually they don't last for some reason. The chubby comedic, you know, relief, well, especially as kids.
What's going to happen is he's going to hit his growth spurt and then he's going to lose all the baby fat. And then, yeah, he's, I don't know what he's going to do, but
he'll lose all his talent like most chubby people when they get skinny.
Yeah. But
Bill Paxton,
Weird Science is good. I wouldn't call it Hughes's best.
I loved
film.
It. I mean, as in the 80s, as a kid, it just had everything for me that I just love. I wasn't big on 16 Candles. I loved Ferris Bueller and
not a fan.
And I enjoyed his more adult stuff. Like, I enjoyed Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but it didn't really hit until you get a little bit older. And then Uncle Buck was okay. She's having a baby. Why would I care, you know, as a kid? You know, I mean, honestly. And I loved Home Alone and then all the other movies that he wrote. But I just loved Weird Science. I remember doing the whole Anthony Michael Hall thing where he's like drunk in the back of the car. It's like, man.
Isn't that, that's in 16 Candles?
No. Weird Science. No, Weird Science. He's in the back, like he's got sunglasses on and they're driving really fast from a bar and he's just like the entire time. Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, Anthony Michael Hall gets drunk a lot in then John Hughes's movies. Cause I'm pretty sure he's like drunk in that back of that like car in the mechanic shop in 16 Candles. I'm pretty sure too.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen 16. Like, that is not one that I have revisited. It's probably the least amount one that I've revisited of his.
Yeah, I haven't seen it that much either. Maybe twice.
Well, that and Curly Sue. Like, I don't even know if I've ever saw Curly Sue to begin with.
I haven't seen Curly Sue. Does not look that good. So
it ended. It ended his director career.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kane asked me off mic why, or I guess he just asked the question out loud, why John Hughes have stopped directing. And from what I have heard, he hated working with Jim Belushi so much that he just gave up on Hollywood, which I believe because, I mean, it's Jim Belushi. And he didn't even want to work with him in the first place. He wanted Alec Baldwin. And when you're watching the movie, you're like, yeah, this should have been Alec Baldwin. Why did you settle, John? Why did you settle? You should have just waited. for him to get ready. I think my favorite, and it is his worst movie. I think my favorite, of course, is Breakfast Club. I think it's his best movie by a considerable margin. I think it's the only, I don't want to say his only great, great movie, because I do like damn near everything he's made. She's Having a Baby is very uneven, but it probably has the best scene he's ever directed, which is like the end, that musical montage when Kevin Bacon is holding the baby. It's a scene so good, it redeems the entire movie. And Alec Baldwin, coming back to him, is fucking amazing in it. I just don't think he was ready to... I think he's at his best when he deals with teenagers. He just like tapped into that better than most directors. Like he really, when you're watching Breakfast Club, you don't feel like, oh, this is a middle-aged man writing teenagers. You just feel this is a group of teenagers. Like it, there's no point where I go, eh, well, yeah. No, it's all the dialogue feels authentic to their characters. And I think, and that's a movie we're never going to recast because it's impossible to top it. But I think Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is a perfect one to tackle because as good as Steve Martin and John Candy are, they're archetypes more than they are characters. It's the straight man who's having a breakdown, and it's the goof, it's the lovable goof that keeps fucking shit up. And I say that because it's been ripped off ad nauseum at this point. I mean, we've
had, you know, what's funny that it never really, I mean, like I knew it was pretty close to it, but rewatching Tommy Boy recently, I did not realize how much similar that movie was or how much it took. I mean, it's almost exactly just turned up almost a lot more of the slapstick, just turned up a little bit more and add in, of course, a few different things. But it's almost like the torn up car and all that, you know, just the them sharing the hotel and all that stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's been inspired. It inspired like a whole like buddy cop type movies, you know, 48 Hours, all that. That kind of inspired that. This inspired that road trip buddy movie.
Speaking of the car mention, has anybody noticed, like first time I watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles a couple weeks ago, I kind of noticed that the car, you know, they rent at the end, it's kind of, it looks exactly like the National Lampoon's, you know, the Griswold's family station wagon. That wood paneled car, so I was like, okay, that's kind of a cool Easter egg. But then I watched, in preparation for this episode, I watched The Great Outdoors. And John Candy's family's vehicle is another wood-paneled car. And so I'm thinking, like, does John Hughes just have, like, a thing for wood-paneled cars, or...
Is it the same car?
Well, no, they're all different. Like, you know, but the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles car, you know, it's got the same green as the Griswolds. You know, it's much more, kind of almost looks like it's on, like, an Easter egg or something, where The Great Outdoors is, like, a red wood-paneled Jeep. But I still thought it was kind of funny that
reuses the John Hughes cars like he does as actors.
Well, like I mean, I didn't grow up in the 80s, but I don't think wood paneled car, like I've only seen a wood paneled car in an 80s movie if it's got John Hughes on it.
It was a thing. I was an 80s kid, and I remember a friend having that almost exact type of station wagon car. You didn't see them everywhere, you know. I saw more of the old type of Suburbans, the things that look like freaking tanks back in the day. But yeah, they were a thing. Just I don't think, of course, they were, you know, when you think about it, it just, it feels like every family ever, you know, middle America family had a wood paneling.
I think that's why he does it. I think he's using it because to him that's what family cars are, is that car. I don't think it's his specific, because Sam Raimi put his car in literally all of his movies, save for The Quick and the Dead. I don't think that's what he's doing, because his family car would have been, I don't think they had wood paneling back in the 50s. You could correct me. I'm not a car guy. I don't know. But yeah, I do think that there's probably some sort of, I mean, it's probably when he had a family and he had to go on a road trip and shit, because that's where Vacation came from, is his frustrations trying to take his family to Disneyland. Because he wrote that story before it became a movie. He wrote it for Rolling Stone, I believe. It was an article. and it was vacation to Disneyland. It wasn't Wally World or anything, because he didn't need to use the rights for an article. And so I think probably that's his family car. So he puts it in all of his movies and so forth. I didn't know that Midnight Run came after this. So I think its influence is even deeper, because everything ripped off Midnight Run. And I'm not going to say that that ripped off this, but it's very similar. Again, where you have a straight guy breaking down because the guy to his left is an idiot who won't stop fucking up. The twist to that is the idiot that won't stop fucking up is actually the lead. Robert De Niro is the idiot. And oh my God.
Charles Grodin.
Thank you. I was like, the guy who's just died, unfortunately, rest in peace. Charles Grodin is the straight man who has to just deal with this fucking idiot. I want to recast that now. It's so good. But Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I think, has fingers in a lot of pies that people. Whoa! Oh,
Save it for a different pod, guys. Save it for a different pod.
No. Not hot take that good. Oh, no. No, get out.
I don't even think that's a hot take.
We're not even going there. Get out of it.
Okay, so here's one thing I kind of noticed with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is kind of a John Hughes staple. You'll see it in Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Is that, well, given the situation, of course, too, Steve Martin and John Candy are pretty much wearing the same outfits throughout the whole movie. And that was kind of so, because Hughes kind of liked to keep everybody in one set of clothes so he could kind of mix around with the scenes and editing. Sailor, you probably were aware of this. I don't know if you were.
I was not aware of this. I did not know that.
No, yeah. So if you watch Breakfast Club, I mean, yeah, they take off their shirt or hoodies, you know, or tied around their waist, but they're mostly... they look identical throughout the whole movie. And so Breakfast Club particularly, and Ferris Bueller to an extent, you know, most of those scenes that they have, you know, whether they're, you know, getting high and dancing, or they're going to the pop machine, I think is one scene, or, you know, Ferris is dancing and he's at the ball game, you know, those could easily be interchangeable. And so that's kind of, I think, maybe Hughes' secret weapon is that he would shoot the film and then knowing full well that he could rearrange certain scenes because there would be no continuity issues because they'd be dressed the exact same. And you kind of get this in Planes, Trains. I don't think, you know, he had that in mind for this film, but it was just something I kind of picked up and thought, you know, there could be a situation where maybe he had stuff around, but that's just a huge
thing. Well, your theory actually holds water, because there's a 30-minute cut of this. I mean, 30-minute longer director's cut somewhere. And there are scenes that were supposed to be towards the end that are more in the middle. Like, he did have to really work hard at editing this movie to what it is. And it's, I think some of those scenes are on YouTube, or at least there was some sort of channel that was breaking down all of the scenes. There was like a highway cop subplot that they cut to, but there was more of it in the original, and there was just like a lot of this shit. It's very much, yeah. I don't think it's as bad as like Ghostbusters, where you're like, man, did they really scotch tape this fucking, or and Caddyshack, where you're like, man, editing saved this fucking movie. Like, there was no movie, and some editor was like, all right, I'm gonna work my magic. I think John Hughes was very clever and very smart at story structure. So I think even when it was a mess, he was like, all right, let's just fucking move this shit around.
You know what I found interesting, and I don't know if anybody really talks about this that much, but I think it's kind of we've grown up with this. Like you said, this wasn't the biggest hit when it came out, but over time, it's almost like, I'm not going to throw it in the cult category, but it almost has that type of feeling, like a cult type of following movie. Or love to it, because it every year it just kind of feels like even more it's being talked about every, you know, it's about Thanksgiving, and some people even throw it around Christmas, which is crazy, but I guess because of the setting and snow and that kind of stuff. But neither one of these guys are really likable, the characters. Like, did y'all feel that at all? Like, really, honestly, like, if you were traveling with the other,
it was,
if you were Dale or you were Neil, I understand why Neil doesn't like Dale. Like, I get that completely. Dale is annoying as hell. I'd have lost my cool on him too, but do we not point that out because we love John candy so freaking much? Like, neither one of these guys are that great of people.
Oh, yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of where they're staying in that motel and they got to share that one bed together and they kind of absolutely kind of, you know, snap in the middle of the night. I think you kind of see that where they're like, they absolutely do not want to be in the situation either. And, you know, John Candy doesn't want to be with, or, you know, Dell doesn't want to be with Neil and Neil doesn't want to be with Dell. But like, yeah, I think, you know, John Candy, I mean, you want to hate him, but at the same time, you can't. I mean, I'm sure, yeah, like you're saying, Kane, if we were in Steve Martin's position, I mean, yeah, I don't
yeah,
think
when
I
he's like
last.
Clearing
I mean,
out his if throat I, and crap, you know, it's like that oh whole, everything that no. he did, I would have, how about, I wouldn't have even been in a situation to begin with.
Dude knows that that Steve Martin's having a shower and he uses up every yes. towel except like a freaking hand towel. I'm like, oh, come on, buddy.
He bit his tongue longer.
But again, Dell, of course, like he's been, as we find out at the end, you know, he's just been on the road for 8 years. I don't think he's had a friend. So, I mean, he's pretty much lived on his own too. So maybe you can kind of give him a pass for, you know, not really knowing how to use a shared space,
no,
you know, not,
I'm
even
sorry.
When he was
you're,
married, you know.
You're what, 30, well, okay. 40 years old by now. You should know how to interact around other people.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I get it. Like, I'm a person. And I'm one of those, and I'll readily admit I'm the type of person that if you're smacking while you're eating around me, or if I can hear you breathing, I have a hard time. Like I'm ready to just like throw punch you, and just, you know what I mean. Like I have that. I just, it drives me nuts. So everything that Dell does, I would have lost my mind. I would rather have slept out in the cold than shared a room with him.
But I don't disagree with that, but I don't think Steve Martin is the best either.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, that's what Kane's he's not a, he's yeah. not a great, he's not a great guy. He, like, that's where it's like, it's weird because usually sometimes in these movies, you have somebody that you side with. Mm-hmm. And why would you side with Dale until you get the reveal? Why would you side with either one of them? Like even with Steve Martin trying to get back to his, it's like I don't even know if he even loves his wife. I because even like in the montage, no, honestly, in the montage at the end when he's thinking about his family, does he even picture his wife? He just pictures his kids and his home.
No, that's true. But again, I think also if so, say we were taking Dell, John Candy's Dell's position, I think, you know, all of a sudden the relationship between us and Steve Martin is completely different. I mean, like, I think, Kane, you and Steve Martin's character would get along perfectly. You guys would share the room. You're not going to be spilling beer in the bed. And I think Steve Martin, therefore, will be a lot more mellow and chill. You'll just share a room. You'll both hop on. You know, there's no, like, Dell is still kind of the one, he's the instigator in these comedic shenanigans we see throughout the film. And where Steve Martin's kind of just along for the ride. So I think if you take out John Candy and you just put another Steve Martin, I think they would both be a lot cooler, a lot calmer.
Yeah. What do you think, Sailor?
Well, I think that's what makes this movie better than all of its contemporaries or movies that rip it off is that, yeah, let's use Due Date as an example, because it's literally this movie beat for beat. You're always supposed to be on Robert Downey Jr.'s side. You're supposed to find Zach Galifianakis' shenanigans obnoxious and you can't stand him. And then there's the turn. There's always the turn where you're like, oh, his dog died or whatever the fuck. The most egregious example of that is The Identity Thief, which is basically the same fucking movie. And you're supposed to be with Jason Bateman and Melissa McCartney is the obnoxious fucking person that you can't stand. And then there's the scene where she's like, oh, my mama never loved me and my daddy's a drunk or some shit. And then you have the sad music and you're like, oh, I feel for that person. Oh my goodness. And this one, you keep alternating between I'm with Dell right now because I was gonna say Steve Martin. I just want to call him Steve Martin and John Candy because they don't feel like characters, they just feel like themselves. Sometimes you're with Dell and then sometimes you're with Neil. And I think that's brilliant. That you're never on any one side at any one. You're never always fully on Steve Martin's side, Neil's side.
Yeah, it's kind of like a pendulum. Like it swings back and forth. Because even like with the thing that's funny about like Neil, he's the one who kind of like, if he'd have let it go, because after the cab incident, when they're sitting wherever, I'm going blank, but like Neil is the one that is like, hey, you know, he's the one who brings up the you stole my cab. Like if he lets that go, they may not end up on this trip together. Like it almost that's like the catalyst that really started it. Like if he just lets it go, the whole stealing the cab thing, then it may, the movie ends type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, fuck Kevin Bacon. Fuck that guy. And it's a character from She's Having a Baby. So
is that the same character?
I don't know about that.
Because I thought, okay, because this kind of ties into another part I want to mention about this film was, you know, there are so many, like, I'm going to call them cameos, I guess, with like other actors who have worked with John Hughes before. And, and I thought, okay, so Kevin Bacon, because he's in She's Having a Baby, but She's Having a Baby came out a year after. So I'm thinking, maybe I don't know how Hollywood worked back in the 80s, but maybe Kevin Bacon was already signed on for She's Having a Baby, but that would have been about a year before they would have even shot the thing. So, but I thought that was kind of interesting that Planes, Trains came out. But then also just to run down, I wrote down a list. You got, I'm going to butcher these names maybe, Lyman Ward, Edie McClurg, and Ben Stein, who are all in Ferris Bueller. And then there's Michael McKean, who was in Clue, which wasn't a John Hughes movie, but also an age. And viewers today might know him from Better Call Saul. He was also in Spinal Tap. Mm-hmm. Then Dylan Baker shows up, who audiences today would know as Kirk Connors from the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man series. Bill Irwin, who was the kind of the mustached grump who was seated to the right of Steve Martin on the airplane. And he had a role that I know him from Seinfeld. And then Martin Ferrero, who was the final motel front desk clerk. He is the lawyer or the accountant, whatever he was, in Jurassic Park. So there is quite a list of who's who in this film.
That's what makes it hard. Like when we get into our casting, we're only picking the director, Neil and Dale, because there's so many different people in here. Like you said, all those different ones, but they're on screen for what, 90 seconds? Oh,
yeah. I got a cheat coming up, but yeah, I got a cheat. But yeah, no, I agree. Like you're looking, you're like, I got an actor in mind for like all of these people, I think that's also because, you know, like I just listed all their names. Like we're familiar with these actors in this movie. Like we've all seen these movies or, you know, heard of them at least. So like you kind of are like, okay, I know who this guy's from. And then I can kind of think of somebody else. Where if these were all people who, you know, didn't have a career afterwards, I don't think we'd be wanting to recast them as much.
Right, right.
All I just want to do is interject and say, I know that She's Having a Baby came out a year after this, but they had already shot that film because that movie is in this movie. You can literally hear audio from She's Having a Baby in this movie because when he calls his wife, she's watching that movie. Where he's like, my plane got delayed again or whatever. Whatever he has to tell her that he's going to be late again, she's literally watching that movie. So they must have shot it and then just waited 7 months to release it, I guess. So, yeah, he had already worked with Kevin Bacon. So,
you are right.
Yeah, it was shot in 1986.
Yeah, I looked up the trivia on IMDb. This movie was filmed at the same time as The Great Outdoors and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
You'll never convince me that that's not the character from She's Having a Baby.
But if you're saying that you can hear the movie in, like, She's Having a Baby, the movie, and Planes, Trains, that can't be the same character because...
That means nothing, too. That means nothing.
Why can't it just be Kevin Bacon?
The actual Kevin
Bacon? There's no... Kevin Bacon would be in New York in the 80s.
I think Steve Martin would run up. Well, I mean, because if it was the real Kevin Bacon, he would have just been.
No, because we've determined that Steve Martin doesn't seem like the type of guy. He's a high-strung marketing executive. He doesn't have time to watch Footloose.
Well, Kevin Bacon wouldn't have been hailing a cab. He would just be riding a bicycle.
Oh, what is that? Quicksilver reference?
You goddamn right it is.
Oh, brother. Deep cuts here.
Deep cuts, Kevin Bacon. So we're getting into the discussion proper. What are y'all feeling about this movie? Because it sounds like Kane, are you overly critical of this, or are you just picking nits? Or
no, a little bit. I love John Candy. I'm not the biggest Steve Martin fan. Like, I do think he has his moments. He's great. I don't think he's always great. I think in this movie, yeah, he plays his part pretty well, but there's times where he Steve Martins it up that it drives me nuts. Because like when he's running, it's like the whole
Steve Martin, yeah,
like, with his arms out like that,
yeah, type of thing. I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
When he's doing the little I don't know, like the flashback or whatever montage at the end, and all the little faces that he's making, like he couldn't have just like stared off into the distance, you know, like pondering nicely. It's like all the little goofies, like, oh, oh, you know, kind of like the, almost that you don't hear it, but you know, it's just, there's little things that I just do. But no, I do like this movie. It is a movie that I watch regularly. I really do like, but I think it's just, it's one of those movies that if I had seen it as an adult for the first time, I'm like, I don't know if I would have liked either one of these. And that maybe that's a reason why people didn't like it. It wasn't a box office hit. Cause again, why would you like either one of these characters until you find out the reveal? Other than that, I'm just like,
I think that's also why they were cast, is because you're going in there with 10 years of
who they are. Yeah, I get that.
Of history on either side, because I think John Candy was already SCTV and whatnot.
Well,
and
then why wasn't this a box office hit?
Who knows, was it the
R rating? Was it just because of the R rating? Does that hurt it?
It could have come out at the wrong time. There could have been why wasn't The Thing a hit? I mean, there's no telling.
That's a different genre. Movies are different. I mean, these are all, you've got John Hughes, Steve Martin, John Candy, who all, I'm not saying they're all box office smash hit. They're not Tom Cruise, you know, box office smash hits, but they're big enough names with enough credit to them that you would have thought they would, like you said, they would have had this following, that there would have been more than a $49 million box office draw.
Hollywood is a cruel mistress. It's always a gamble. You never know. You could have a movie filled with the greatest cast of all time, and it might not connect with audiences. It's a Wonderful Life failed at the box office. Wizard of Oz failed at the box office. Like, there's some movies that sometimes audiences don't give a shit about at the time, and then eventually. I feel like, yeah, this was probably, I mean, it's not probably, it wasn't a box office hit, but I think probably within like 2 years, like everyone was like, oh yeah, this one. Because I think around that time, I think it was probably a VHS hit. Mm-hmm. I couldn't crunch any numbers, but VHS was around this time. So I would assume that this probably did very well on VHS.
Yeah, I was trying to look at 1987 box office, what you would have had going on then. But so this went head to head with Three Men and a Baby.
Oh yeah, and that fucking destroyed.
And that thing made $160 million.
Well, you don't go against Tom Selleck's mustache, so.
And the fucking screaming hot charisma of Steve Gutenberg. Three Men and a Little Baby. That was a fucking monster hit.
It was. Yeah. It was. I mean, because you had Tom Selleck, but you had Ted Danson, you know, hot off, you know, around Cheers. And then Gutenberg was a pretty big name off of Police Academy and stuff. So you had three pretty major players at that time all in one movie.
Yeah, no, Three Men and a Baby probably, in terms of, you know, going off of their ages, that is definitely, you could not probably have three better box office stars at the time in the 80s, the late 80s.
But wouldn't Steve Martin and John Candy be as big a box office draw as them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Ted Danson wasn't really a box office draw.
Was John Candy a box office draw, though?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Like, I'm not saying definitive, because I wasn't going to see movies in theaters at this age. I was, everything I was watching was at all. But I also, Three Men and a Baby was PG. So I wonder.
Yeah. Well, you got that.
I guarantee it's the R rating that killed this movie. I would bet all of my money, because it's clearly a fucking movie for families, and adults are like, ah. And that's literally outside of that one scene. There should have been like a little intro by Steve Martin, like, you can bring your family. They're gonna hear some.
Just one rant, really.
Welcome to Marathon. May I help you?
Yes.
Hi. May I help you?
You can start by wiping that fucking dumbass smile off your rosy fucking cheeks. Then you can give me a fucking automobile. A fucking Datsun, a fucking Toyota, a fucking Mustang, a fucking Buick. 4 fucking wheels and a seat.
I really don't care for the way you're speaking to me.
And I really don't care for the way your company left me in the middle of fucking nowhere with fucking keys to a fucking car that isn't fucking there. And I really didn't care to fucking walk down a fucking highway and across a fucking runway to get back here to have you smile at my fucking face. I want a fucking car right fucking now.
May I see your rental agreement?
I threw it away.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, what?
You're fucked.
That's one rant. You just cover their ears. It's fine. It's no big deal. It's not that bad. That's why the rating system is...
That F-bomb, which, you know, I don't know what movie I was just watching where I was like, oh, this is ridiculous that it's R-rated just because of the swearing. Because it's not like, you know, no one's, you know, putting ratings on TikToks or YouTube videos. I mean, a 12-year-old can go on YouTube or TikTok and hear someone drop the F-bomb, but you can't go watch a movie that has F-bombs dropped in it. It really makes no sense.
That documentary, this film is not rated, I think, or unrated. I can't remember. It's a movie breaking down the rating system where, like, it's ridiculous. Because they don't judge the context. They judge the content. And I'm like, there's a huge difference. Like, to me, there is nothing. Why is this rated R? PG-13, I understand. Kids probably don't need to hear him ranting about it. And even that is debatable. It's like, whatever. It's just like, I'm also not a father, so I'm like, whatever.
Well, and what was crazy is usually R meant it was nudity or violence. That's usually when you got the R back then. So I guess just because the amounts of F words he said.
Yeah, I mean, that movie Student Bodies, which is, you know, that horror comedy, where they even have a kill count of how many people the killer is killing. But even after it came out, it was like PG-13. And they're like, oh, fuck, we needed this to be an R. So they literally inserted a scene where a guy breaks the fourth wall and said, fuck, that's how we get in this R rating. And that's the joke. But it's not really a joke because that's how they got the R rating, because he just says fuck twice in a row. So they don't give a shit if you're killing fucking teens, like 100 teens. You say fuck twice in a row. Oh my God, God forbid. Can't let kids watch this. So it's always ridiculous. But I would bet the tip of my pinky that's probably why it didn't do well. Because this is a movie for families. Families should see it. And I saw this shit when I was a kid. But it probably was edited on TV. So
Like you probably wouldn't. Because I never remembered that at all. It was always the bed, you know, them sharing the bedroom. It was like, where's your other hand? Between two pillows. That's not two pillows. That kills me every time. Oh. That is one of my favorite things ever.
John Hughes was very good at creating scenes. And that might also be why, I think this is a beloved classic, but I think this has probably less great scenes than some of his more, because I think of Breakfast Club. You get, like, without even thinking, you can name like 5 iconic scenes from that, or National Lampoon's Vacation, or Home Alone, Uncle Buck.
This one,
I gotta disagree with that. I don't think
so. Yeah, the whole like station wagon, like the where, you know, driving, and he turns into the devil for like a split second. Like, that means they had to shoot that scene. He had to go and change into a devil's outfit for literally less than 5 seconds. Yeah. Of the thing, it's hilarious.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about when John Candy, it's his turn to drive, and he starts singing to Ray Charles, Mess Around.
Oh, that too.
Oh, yeah. That is my favorite scene from the movie. He's just driving down, he's smoking too, So he's got one hand on the cigarette. And then when the cigarette's in his mouth, he's like finger playing the piano on the dashboard. And then he gets his freaking jacket arms caught on like the seat. And then, oh my gosh.
Trying to get the jacket off.
Yeah.
I think that's, I don't know if it's the funniest scene, but I don't think it's John Candy's funniest scene. Because that's the thing that a lot of movies don't play up is his physical comedy prowess. He's a very gifted physical comedian. I think he had to because in the beginning of his career, I don't think movies knew what to do with him. Like, even if you look at like Splash, I think Splash was the first one to figure out what to do with John Candy. And it's, oh, he's a lovable teddy bear. And I think, after that, that's just what they cast him as. And
yeah, because I did love how his weight, like, especially here, like, I think you in the wrong hands in this movie, or if it was done today and you had a John Candy, the weight would have been a big issue. And I don't think the weight has ever really played up. Movie that well, and that was kind of typical with John Candy, period. It was not really played for laughs. It wasn't really poked fun at all the time. I don't know if that was like John Candy's like, hey, I don't want that, or if that was just a conscious or unconscious, you know, subconscious decision to do that. But I love that it wasn't the Chris Farley, Melissa McCarthy, I'm chubby, this, and I have to be, that's how I'm funny.
That I absolutely hate that, because when McCarthy is just using her weight as the butt of the joke, it's like, okay, it's funny once, and then
no. I never blame the comedian for that, because I doubt most comedians want to be like, hey, look at me, I'm fat funny.
Don't sign on for the role then, though. I think that's why
everyone wants a paycheck.
I think that's why I actually like McCarthy in the Ghostbusters remake she did, because her weight wasn't a joke ever. And I was like, this is actually kind of refreshing to just watch.
There were no jokes. So, women aren't funny.
What's the spy movie she did?
Spy. It's called Spy. Spy.
Okay. Yeah. At the beginning of that, it's Fat Girl Fall Down. But after that, when she starts like trying to inhabit the role of the spy, she's legitimately funny in it. So I think these comedians, I don't think that, unless you're Kevin Hart and every fucking movie is, how fucking tiny, isn't that hilarious? And it's like, yeah, it was like 10 movies.
No, every Kevin Hart movie is, hi, I'm Kevin Hart, because he just plays himself in every movie.
This is true. Okay, I got a serious question then.
All right.
Okay. What is a traveling shower curtain ring salesman? Is that a legitimate occupation?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask, how much would he be pulling in annually in the 80s?
Well, first off, let's figure out if it's a real occupation. If it is, how much is he pulling off in the
80s?
How is that a thing? Who's not going to the store to just buy shower curtain rings?
Back then, I mean, there was lots of people who'd go door to door selling Tupperware and smoothie machines.
Well,
and
people need Tupperware.
Vacuums. But I mean,
yeah, but shower. I don't just like how.
I mean, but was there?
Did he make it up?
But did we have?
I honestly think that's the joke, is that it's not a thing, and he just goes to hotels and steals the rings, puts them in a suitcase, and sells them as earrings and shit or whatever.
I could see that being an actual, like, you know, like not like an actual, like, he makes it seem like he's part of like a company, like a popular company.
Like Alec Baldwin just walked in and told him that he doesn't get to have coffee because it's for closers, and he's got to go out and sell all these freaking shower curtains, and he's busting his butt because he doesn't want to end up like Jack Lemmon. Yeah.
8 years on the road. It's like, one of these days I want that the collection of steak knives.
He made over $100 for like what, half an hour's work of selling shower curtain rings as earrings to women in like whatever they were, which $100 in the 80s for one day's work, I think would be pretty good. I think.
Oh yeah.
That's like 80, yeah. If he did that every day and he just traveled across the States, he's probably got a nest egg in the bank. I would imagine
enough money to bury his dead wife. He's carrying around in that giant luggage.
I read that theory. I don't believe that.
I mean,
Though we never see, I mean, we never
who
see
sells fucking shower curtain rings? A psycho, a maniac, somebody who would carry around his dead wife. I'm just
you and your theories.
I don't
know. He's just, I to me, I always, I just think that that's all he has. Everything he owns is in that trunk.
Yeah,
that's why. So it's just everything that he has.
And the only thing,
if his dead wife in the trunk, he wouldn't pull out a framed photo of her. He would pull out the whole body the way you're going
with. and it would smell.
Like, I'm getting a Norman Bates vibe from what you're trying to think of John Candy's character as. He would literally pull out the whole body, dress it up into her clothes, and then like have a conversation with it. But instead, he just looks at the photo, kisses it with his fingers, and has a cigarette and puts 25 cents into a jiggling bed frame mattress. So
I'm mad that that's not a thing anymore. There has to be a motel out there that still has jiggling.
I hope not. Not one I'll be staying at anytime soon.
You want it for that experience. If these walls could talk, I'm just saying.
I don't
subscribe to. There's many theories I've subscribed to. That's not one of them. I think it would be fun, though. But no, I do think that's just a thing. He's just.
Are you putting that in your remake? Is that what you're doing?
I did say that this is an all or nothing episode.
So. Oh, brother.
All right. Yeah. Duke, you got anything else to say about this
movie? I just have one other note about the movie. And that was, you know, when Steve Martin's trying to get to the airport and his flight leaves at 6 and he shows up at 5:58. Nowadays, you ain't getting on that plane. Even if that plane hadn't been canceled. You're not showing up. You can't show up to the airport 2 minutes before, like,
pre-9/11 you could do that.
It's hilarious watching movies. Oh yeah, pre-9/11 in airports.
Yeah, like, well, that, like, Home Alone 2 wouldn't exist. Like, there'd be no way you can get the tickets mixed up, because if all of a sudden they saw a ticket that was not part of their flight list, it would be like that plane would be locked down.
Yeah, you got anything else?
I feel like we haven't even really talked about this movie. All I have to say is...
Okay, I got a question. Here's something to talk about the movie. We can get our last bits in, and then maybe we can go into the recasting part.
All right.
Ignoring Steve Martin and John Candy, all the other characters who made the most of their screen time, let's say. Who made the most of their screen time besides Steve Martin and John Candy in this movie?
Michael McKean, State Trooper.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
He had like barely any screen time.
I know, but he's the best.
Okay.
I mean, do you want me to say Kevin Bacon?
I'm not saying Kevin Bacon. I would go Edie McClurg when her and Steve Martin are doing the F-bombs. I thought that.
Yeah.
Like, she's just great in those small roles, like Ferris Bueller, and she's in something else too. I think I've seen her in where she kind of plays a similar role, and it's just I like her, and I like Dylan Baker as Owen when he's got all that tobacco chew in his mouth, I think, and just yelling at him.
I like that I do like that he's just sprinkled in these character actors that you're like, oh, I know that guy, because if he filled it up with his regulars, I do think it would have been not obnoxious, but like, oh, it's what's that his regular, like, oh, it's Judd Nelson, it's Emilio Estevez, or whatever.
The problem was, like, you know, They all kind of had a falling out too. I mean, Anthony Michael Hall, I think he wanted him for Pretty in Pink, and Anthony Michael Hall didn't want to be typecast, so he was like, no. And then John Hughes just never worked with him again. He like held that grudge to the grave.
I thought that was Ally Sheedy.
No, I think Anthony Michael Hall had the same thing.
Oh, because I know
I think it was a few of them that he.
Well, yeah,
he wanted her for something.
Molly Ringwald, I think, also maybe turned down one at the end. Molly Ringwald turned down. He wanted Molly Ringwald for some kind of Wonderful after she had just been in Pretty in Pink. Like, so, and she's like, no, I can't keep doing all these roles where, and she wanted to move away from, you know, just being John Hughes's main female actress. So
he was so mad at her. He didn't talk to her for like a decade. And I'm like,
what?
John Hughes might've been a dick. Cause, and she's right. She just did that movie. Yeah. He's asking her to do it again. And she's like, No,
thank you.
I want to do other things. Her career wasn't the best, but she was, I mean, credit where credit is due, she was trying to branch out. So, but
she's made a comeback lately.
Bring it. What has she been in? I know you want to talk about it.
She's just in Riverdale as Archie's mom. So, you know.
There you go. There you go.
That was for you, Kane. That was for you, Kane.
Good Lord have mercy.
Nope. And one other thing I'll just add, and then I'm pretty much done with this movie, is Steve Martin's son in this movie, Matthew Lawrence, is also Robin Williams' son in Mrs. Doubtfire. That's just a fun trivia fact.
Right.
Actors are in movies. That's a good way to...
And he did pretty much nothing after those two roles, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was in Hot Chick.
Oh, I'm watching Hot Chick.
Like
I guess he's part of the Lawrence family. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the acting royalty. They had a whole show together.
What was that show called, even? Brotherly Love?
Oh, no, I don't know.
No, you're right, Duke. It's
yes. Brotherly Love.
Yeah. You're right. I'm not even going to Google it, but you're right.
Not even going to get there. It's that thing.
All right, let's get to the ratings. What y'all give it?
All right. Yeah, Duke, what'd you give this?
Rating out of 10, or how are we doing this?
Great. Have you not listened to one of the episodes?
Well, I've been listening to your bonus episodes. Shameless plug. You should go watch those, everybody. Or listen.
And we do the letter grade here. So give us the Canadians
version
of it.
Well, if a B minus is The Woman in the Window, then I'm gonna have to give this an A. That was the Canadian joke. You guys all. Okay, here we go.
So a D. A D is a B minus. Apparently.
No, here we go. I'll do the serious. Okay. So my rating for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I would probably. You know what? I'm giving this an A plus. You know. I give it an A-plus to a movie where, you know, if I'm going to rewatch it again, probably within the year, you know.
No, or is this Canadian? Or
no, this is serious. Like, this is serious. Like, this is...
You consider this a perfect movie?
Yeah, I consider this a perfect movie. I don't think there's anything wrong with this movie, really. I mean, we've talked about some of the issues, like, you know, whether or not we'd like Steve Martin or John Candy, whether they're both assholes and we'd want to actually travel with them, but... I have no faults with this movie. Like, it's a movie that I would.
I don't either, but I don't think.
I think it's
of the best movies ever made.
Well, I have no problem having multiple movies having an A-plus rating.
All right, Kane, what do you give it?
This is an A. This is an A or an A-plus. Like, you know, I'm thinking if I'm doing an A-plus, like it'd be like a 9 or 9 to 10, in that range, in a 10-point scale. So I'm giving it like a 9+. So an A+. That's my rating. That's how I'm looking at it, everybody.
I mean, you're looking at it with Canada eyes.
Canada eyes.
I think it's good.
I think it's good. A+. I think it's good. A+. Okay. Well, give me the realistic grade to this thing.
I would say if I was just going just straight movie, not rewatchability factor or the warm fuzzies that we get for it being a Thanksgiving movie, rewatchable every year, I would say B+. But because now when you factor that in, I would go A-.
There we go.
I'm going with the original grade. I give this B+.
That's fine. Yeah,
I think it's a very good movie. B+ is a good movie. That's a really good movie. I don't think it's, I mean, even if I said it was a great movie, I don't think it's an A+ movie. I think do I put this on the same level as Steve Martin's best movie, The Jerk? Absolutely.
Oh, no, get out of here.
We're not going into Hot Take City, Duke. We're not doing it.
My girlfriend loves The Jerk. I personally cannot stand. I think it's Steve Martin's like worst film I've seen of his.
You're out of your fucking...
So you had, that you've seen?
Well, I've seen most of his 80s stuff and I've, you know, the 90s and that, but I've seen.
Well, I haven't seen, to be fair, I haven't seen a lot of Steve Martin's movies either,
The Jerk, I'm not going to say like, oh yeah, this movie sucks, but like I've watched it and it did nothing for me personally. I didn't find it all too funny, but.
Well, I think it's like Airplane where if you vibe with what it's doing, you think it's the funniest movie ever made. And if you don't, you're like, what the fuck am I watching? Like,
no, I think it has its moments. It's not a movie that I like to return to, but I think like the, where he's, you know, like the sniper shooting the cans of oil. It's like, he's shooting the cans. or like the and I need this lamp, like I've done that before, like I need this like I've done that, like all I need is this, I don't need anything else. Like I think there's very that, but I don't think I'm gonna sit down and watch the whole like the jerk all the way through. Well, like I would this, where I'm gonna return to it almost every year.
I mean, that's fair. There's a line in it that I think is one of the funniest things ever uttered by a human being, and I can't fucking say it on this podcast. So the ball's on Steve Martin to say that line. So
oh, I got you.
Yeah. Okay, I think
you know the line. It's I can't say it because I will get canceled.
I got you. Right. So you went with a B plus.
I'm going with a B,
which plus. Is fine. And I, like I said, I would agree if it was if it didn't catch on to be something that you're constantly, because that's to me, I think B plus is something you're rewatching. You know, maybe it's on that line of whether I'm going to rewatch it or not. And then, but if it is, like you keep it, it grows and it grows. And I think that's why it's A minus. I'm not putting it in the A or A plus territory. But I do think that it at least warrants, because I mean, there's not much you're changing here. You know, as much as I don't like, okay, I think if you got rid of a couple of the Steve Martinisms in it, I think that, I don't know if it makes the movie better. You know, that type of thing. You're not changing anything that John Candy does. And then you have it. And then we didn't even talk about, I mean, you know, and the soundtrack's pretty great too. So, which is just a John Hughes staple to begin with as well.
You know what?
So, yeah.
I'm going to lower my grade to an A because you reminded me of the one scene in the car before the devil, John Candy's dressed as the devil. They do that shot where they're both skeletons. And it's that same bit. He pulls it again in Home Alone, and I just don't like that bit. You know,
he didn't direct it. It's not his fault.
Well, he wrote Home Alone, so.
And do you think he wrote it, and then he turns into skeleton?
Absolutely, I definitely think that.
If he hadn't done it here, I could understand, but he did it here.
It takes me out of the movie because all of a sudden it's like, well, they're dead. Like you don't go from you don't go to a skeleton, like they were literally scared to death.
But John Candy as the devil doesn't take you out of the movie.
Well, that's when he's kind of like, you can tell he's hallucinating.
Where, yeah,
like, that's the skeleton stuff. Yeah. It's kind of so. Yeah, I'm going down to an A now because of that. Would have been an A plus had that scene.
There you go.
Right.
So Home Alone is an A movie to you?
No. Of that scene? No, that's why it's getting knocked down a grade. I'm taking the plus. Home Alone.
No, I'm asking, is Home Alone lesser movie to you because of the skeleton scene?
Yes.
Even though they have survived shit.
Well,
no human being.
Here's the thing.
I don't remember the skeleton scene in Home Alone.
When it's just
Daniel Stern gets
electrocuted, and there's that same scene where it's just the skeleton, but everything, he's got the clothes and the hair.
Wow, do I not remember that?
No, Home Alone.
Too long since I've seen that.
Like, I'm perfectly fine with, you know, unrealistic violence, I'll call it, where someone,
the whole movie's unrealistic to begin with.
But like, as soon as it's like they do something where it's like, oh, this guy's dead, you know, where they show the skeleton, or they show, you know, him full of, or they show him full of bullet holes. It's like, and then he comes back. That's when I'm like, no, you lost me. Like before that, I will believe that. Yeah, you can fall off a building and hit a car and walk it off. But if you're showing me a skeleton or something that kind of takes it off, like definitely drives it into the realm of, you know, this could never actually happen, because
none of it could happen.
Well, but you know, you can fall from heights, and you know, kind of maybe, like, it's kind of believable they might be able to walk it off, you know, because you're not thinking about, oh, he's dead. But when you see the skeleton, you're kind of like, well, yeah, he's pretty much dead. That's just what I'm getting.
You look at a skeleton and you equate it to, that's it.
You can't go to a skeleton and then come back as a human. That just that brief moment of just, no, that comedy doesn't, I'm not a fan of that. So that's why it's going down to an A.
All right, that's fine. I'm fine with that. That's fine with that.
I just think that's so funny to me. It's like skeleton equals nope, no go. It's no good to me. He's dead. They're dead. They should be dead.
Like, I have no problem otherwise with, you know, Macaulay Culkin absolutely, you know, hammering nails into them, but yeah, no, yeah, it's just like one too far. And as a kid, you know, I think as a kid it works too, you know, like as a kid you might think, oh yeah, you know, you can get hit in the head with a paint can or a brick or all this stuff and survive. But I think even as a kid, when you see the skeleton, you're kind of going, well, what just happened here? Like in a cartoon that would work, you'd be like, oh, skeleton, hilarious. But in live action, I don't think that joke translates as well. That's all I mean by that.
Well, that's a perfect transition into things that works and things that don't work, because we are getting into our recastings. And this is a different format than our typical episodes, because for this one, this is the reason why we have a guest host on here. Kane is in the position of being an executive, and Duke and I have to pitch him our remake idea. So this is a slightly different take on our usual format. It's basically the same thing. We reviewed it. Now we're doing our recast, but it's kind of a little bit different. We're trying to shake things up. Plus, there's only two people to recast in this. So we thought, you know,
add a little flavor. So yeah, I'm the studio exec. I'm the Harvey Weinstein here.
Why do you
cut that joke out?
My pants are already zipped down. Who wants these roles bad enough? Who wants to get their movie made bad enough?
I refuse to be part of this bit. No,
it's too late. You're already on the casting couch.
Let the record stand that when we all become famous and then
my secretary immediately canceled,
I was not okay with this. So please spare me from the cancellation.
My secretary is taking the phone off the hook and taking her lunch break. So there's
that just makes me want to consider
come to Papa Harvey.
That makes me want to consider who else I should not be a fan of. Who wants to be a star, baby?
That's all I'm asking.
Oh no.
Well, we're going to you too, because you're going
on that. So we only have three picks. We're only gonna do the director, the Neil, the Steve Martin, and the Dell, the John Candy roles. I am going to say who I also did cast in this as well after we're done, but they're going to pitch me the ideas. I'm going to make a pick that is definitive. I may ask some questions. I may throw some stuff out there. Their job is to sell me and for me to, you know, picture their vision of this movie. And then we'll just, you know, we could have a winner, because there's only three picks. So if one gets all three or two out of one, there we go. So we will have a winner, and we're going to start off with the director. So we've already talked about John Hughes quite a bit, you know, Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Curly Sue. But who, Duke, I'm going to throw it to you first, special guest. Who do you got for your director?
Okay. So for the director, I wanted somebody similar to Hughes who, not it's going to also write the movie, whether he just is a co-writer or he just sole credit. I wanted someone who can write and direct, because as we mentioned, you know, I think there's something special. I think when John Hughes is directing something he's written, he kind of already has a vision of what he wants to see on that scene. And that's what I kind of want to see represented here. And so my pick for director is Taika Waititi, who, of course, is the director of Jojo Rabbit, Thor Ragnarok, What We Do in the Shadows.
So you don't want this to get made?
Well, yeah, okay, so here's the dilemma. Of course, he's got about, like, 15 projects in the works, but I think, you know, this is, well, let's say slate's clean. Yes, this is
this is a hypothetical. He doesn't have
This is all hypothetical, but yeah, I think he'd be a good pick, because as we see, you know, he kind of, he's not stuck to one genre. He likes to have fun. He's mostly a comedic director. And, you know, he's dabbling in 80s properties right now. You know, he's working on Flash Gordon and Akira. That's how you pronounce it, remakes. Mm-hmm. And I think he could write a killer script. I think he could, you know, get the heart and the soul of the original and kind of update it to the 21st century and really bring some of that humor we've come to expect from him. And he's, you know, we've seen the drama and, you know, the more sad, intimate moments in his films. And I think he can bring it all together for a remake. And also, I'm going to quickly add in, I would also have him in the cameo role of the taxi driver, the doobie guy that Larry Hankin played. So that would be my cheat in how to get him into the film. And
I do like him as a performer. If you haven't seen it, because people have seen all his big ones, right? The Thor Ragnaroks and the Jojo Rabbits. Go back all the way back to Boy. I think that might be his best movie. I think it's really fucking good. He plays, it's another movie where he acts in as well as directs, and he plays this deadbeat father of this New Zealand boy, because it's shot in his hometown of in New Zealand. I'm pretty sure Taika is from New Zealand.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah.
And it's just one of those little movies. It's a little movie, but it'll stick with you. There's enough moments. And he's actually kind of a piece of shit in it. So if you wanted to cast him in a bigger role, I wouldn't mind it, because I do think he's actually really good. He's a triple threat. He can write, direct,
and act. So I think definitely.
I think that's a good pick. And I actually do want him to while I wasn't the biggest fan of Jojo Rabbit, that's kind of where I want him to start. But I understand that Hollywood mentality of one for you, one for me. Like, he had to make Thor Ragnarok to make Jojo Rabbit, because he literally couldn't get that movie made. So, and if Thor Ragnarok leads him to any one of the other movies he has on the slate, because the man is like Guillermo del Toro, that he can't not attach himself to things that probably will not get made. But I do want him to start getting smaller and intimate, and I think this would be a perfect project for him.
Yeah, no, I think when you first brought up his name, I do think he's funny. I do think he writes funny stuff. But the first thing that popped in my head was Hunt for Wilder People, because it's a mixture of his humor and his heart, like what you're wanting here. You know, I like,
and that's
I like,
a perfect template for this movie, because right. It's a two-hander, and they're kind of on the road because they're running from the police.
I mean, to a point, but it's funny. It's a different type of funny. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like your normal comedy. You know, it's very much kind of like almost like a British type of humor, like when you watch those, you know, because it's New Zealand area and all that, and it's funny. But like I said, it's got a lot of heart. It's got a couple. Both neither one of the guys are likable. I mean, it's neither the kid's not really likable. The Sam Neill character is not really likable. You know, that type of thing. So. I think
but
that's
the movie
a really
warms you to
right over right yeah exactly that, so. Which what happens here, and that's . No, I really like that pick very much, so I almost had him a pick myself in this movie, but we'll get to that. So pretty good. I really like that. So Sailor, who you got for your director? All right, Sailor, do you have a pitch with your director here?
Now, the reason I have a pitch is the only way I could wrap my head around doing this goddamn story again, because I bumped up against it because it's been done 1,000 fucking times. So I'm like, what would be an interesting twist to this? And follow me here. Because I'm like, I've seen two white guys or any variation of a million fucking times. So I was like, oh, let's just make it a foreign movie. So the first fucking pitch I've ever made on Total Recast is a Total Recast first. I'm actually pitching a foreign movie. So, and it's going to be a period piece. It's going to be set in the 70s. So it's going to be in Korea in the 70s. There's an unspecified political protest going on. There's two people that are on either end of that protest. There's an anarchist, there's a communist. Both. So having them be on a road trip together would be fantastic, because you got something going on. There's a political angle going on, but not specified, because I didn't want to hit you over the head with that. And I found out the Koreans actually have their own type of Thanksgiving that they celebrate. So it's not too far out of the realm of what the original is. And it's pronounced Chuseok. I swear to God, I spent like 5 minutes on YouTube trying to get this. Chuseok. Chuseok. I tried. I'm sorry. But Korea, 1970s, there's an anarchist, there's a communist. They have to come together for whatever reason. They both have different, because I mean, in the original, you have John Candy as a bullshit salesman. Maybe there's different. One of them might be more of a pickpocket or something. What some sort of skill set that they both might need to get. So I have a Korean movie, so obviously I would need a Korean director. Duke pitched the Oscar winner. I'm also picking an Oscar winner. I'm going with Bong Joon-ho. Oh. Yeah, I'm going with big guns on this one.
You are.
Yeah, he made Parasite, Okja, Snowpiercer, Memories of Murder. Now, that does sound like a big director for this. But if you look at his movies, because Parasite is a big movie and won Best Picture, but it's at its core a comedy. There's a lot going on, but it's fucking funny. The Host, big monster movie, funny. Like, a lot of his movies have humor. The guy likes making funny shit. Memories of Murder might be the only movie of his that has like zero humor in it. And even that has like, there's little character beats that are humorous. So I think he has this, and I don't want this to be like a one-to-one comparison. I want there to be something different, a different flair. So that's my pick, Bong Joon-ho. He makes comedies, but he also makes smart comedies, and that's what I want.
Wow, that's a, yeah, that's a lot.
What? I want something different. Yeah. We've seen this movie a million times. Let's shake it up. Let's do something different.
I get you. So we're going to get instead of getting the Americanized version of foreign films, we're going to get a foreignized version of American film.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Kane, you're either going to go with an American version or you're going to go with Sailor's Korean version, which will be successful. And then Hollywood will remake it into an American version.
Remake it anyways.
A few years later.
With Will Smith and Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
They'll remake his remake.
Not remake the remake. Remake.
Yeah. We should have spent a couple of minutes talking about it, whether or not that remake would ever work. But yeah, with Will Smith and Kevin Hart. But
oh Lord,
the answer is no.
Yeah,
the answer is no.
I can see Will Smith doing Steve Martin, but like Kevin Hart, no.
I'm actually surprised they didn't make it back in the day with like Cedric the Entertainer or like D.L. Hughley or some shit. Something like that, like in the early 2000s when they were doing.
Oh,
like,
you just wait till you get like to a my
Tyler Perry type movie.
God damn you! Medea's playing strings and automobiles.
Medea's Thanksgiving mishap or road trip.
Yeah.
Oh, god damn. Now you're
all right. So I've got to go with Taika Waititi.
Mm-hmm. I told you, it's all or nothing, baby.
Well, no, what's funny is the actual my choice for Neil won't ever get there might have worked with your Bong Joon-ho pick. So that's interesting. But now I see what you're going with Bong Joon-ho. I think it's a radically different version of that. That is, you know, but I'm trying to make money here, you know.
Parasite made a lot of money, just saying.
Yeah, Parasite did for certain reasons. I don't know if this is going to make that much money.
I do like Snowpiercer. I will throw that out there.
No, I think he's made a lot of good movies.
And you know? my Steve Martin is in a huge hit right now. I'm just saying, you just lost a lot of money. You just left money on the table.
I don't know. Taika Waititi makes a lot of money too.
That's true.
So, all right. So now we're gonna go to Sailor and his Neil pick, which is played by the Steve Martin that we've talked about. You know, from The Jerk, Father of the Bride, and Parenthood. So, Sailor, who you got for your Neil?
Well, it would be no shock to you to learn I'm keeping it Korean. No
Kevin
Americans.
Hart. It's Kevin Hart.
It's Kevin Hart. In yellow face.
Oh, no.
You lost all these money. I'm going, and I swear to God, this is not a Kane pick. This is not.
Oh, no.
I just Googled best Korean actors, and I mean, he was the first one that popped up because his ass is on a roll. Lee Byung-hun, who is in I Saw the Devil, mm-hmm. and he's the lead of that. He's not the asshole, or the monster, rather. He's in The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, Joint Security Area, and the huge hit right now, Squid Game. He's the guy that slaps him. You know.
He's the main character, then, in Squid Game.
Is he the main? No, he's the one that gets him into the game.
Front man?
Oh.
No.
Yeah. Front man.
I think he's the one that gets him in the
game. Oh, okay. Like, I Googled him. I know.
Okay, yeah. I saw one episode and I barely remember it. I need to get into it because everyone won't shut the fuck up.
I still haven't seen it. I have no plans to see it.
I need my straight man to be a straight man, and he's played a straight man before. but he's also, he has range because he doesn't just play. I mean, you look at him in I Saw the Devil and The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, and while he is, quote unquote, the good guy in both, they're radically different characters. They're different shades, and he brings personality and shades to everything he does. So I still want him to be funny. He's funny in movies, but I need, if I need a straight man, my other actor, the other actor can be the straight man, but he's more better suited for the John Candy. So, and I can't see this actor doing the John Candy. So, and even though that would be a nice departure for him, I just, I love I Saw the Devil. I'm a big fan. I think it's one of the best movies.
It's so good. And he's, and he's so great in it. The, cause the, have you seen it, Duke?
Nope. Sorry. I haven't.
Yeah, that's fine. And it's because it's South Korean, you know, it's subtitled, all that stuff. And he's essentially playing a brother who's going after a murderer who murdered his sister. And, you know, I'm not going to get into everything. There's a lot more to it, but that's kind of the gist of it. And so it's kind of a cat and mouse type of game. And there's just a part in the movie, because I want, if you have not seen I Saw the Devil, go watch I Saw the Devil. There's a part in the movie where he breaks down, and it's some of the best acting that I've ever seen. Like, legitimately, it's so great. And he's crying and all that, and this emotional weight and all this stuff. It's fantastic. Go see it. And if you don't like subtitles, then okay, get over yourself and go read. But for you people who have not seen these movies, you may know him as he was in Terminator Genesis. He was the T-1000, the cop, you know, so he was that. And then he was also Storm Shadow in the new G.I. Joe movies. So just kind of FYI, if you haven't seen anything he's in, that's a couple. So that's a good pick. I think he would work. I think he would work fine.
I mean, he does. I do think he speaks English.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he does. He does, because he sounds, when he's in the G.I. Joe's and Terminator Genesis, he speaks it fine.
Yeah, so if you really, he would be the one that you would have to merge, because the other one I do not think speaks English.
All right, not bad. You have got my attention. Now, Duke, who you got for your Neil?
Okay, so
here comes this Jim Cummings bullshit.
Nope. Originally, who would kind of fit that Steve Martin role. I wanted someone who can play serious when he needs to be, but you know, he can also be really funny when you also need him to be funny. And first I thought of Jim Carrey, of course, but then he was kind of a bit too old. But also I originally wanted one Canadian and one American, because John Candy's Canadian, Steve Martin's American. I thought that would be kind of cool to keep that. And then I actually Googled Jim Carrey, and Jim Carrey was born in the same town that John Candy was born in. So then I thought, oh, that would be cool. But then when we decided on this pitch off kind of, I thought, no, Jim Carrey's not going to work, because I didn't have a good partner to pair him with. So instead, I kind of shifted into looking at notable, well-known Hollywood pairings. So I ended up going with Adam Sandler.
Okay. And
so, of course, we know Adam Sandler, Happy Gilmore. He's Billy Madison. He was in Click. He was in Bedtime Stories, Growing Ups for the families out there.
Duke, I'm gonna throw you a lifeline and just say Uncut
Gems. I was getting to there, Sailor. I was building up to the Uncut Gems.
I'm sorry. I was trying to help you out, because that's all Kane cares about.
And then, of course, he did Uncut Gems. Which is where I think he kind of showed everybody that, yes, he could still actually act when he wants to act. He's not just doing terrible Netflix comedies. So I think, yeah, like, you know, Adam Sandler's a proven comedian. And what I want here for this role is he's not doing his voices that he does. He's not doing the hoi, 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 or whatever he does with his laughs.
Do it again.
No. I can't.
I'll let you get the point if you do it again.
I'm trying to think of making it better. You know, he's like, hoi, 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 hoi. Is that what he does?
It was worth it for that.
Oh, that's going to be on a loop.
I just like the audio.
Anyway, So I wanted something like, you know, The Longest Yard, Adam Sandler, for the comedy, you know, where he's just playing a normal guy without the voices. And but then I also want him to give his acting talent and skill that we've seen and stuff like Uncut Gems. And he's done a few more kind of more dramatic roles in the last few years. He did like the Meyerowitz stories with Ben Stiller. I'm butchering the title of that, but
yeah, the Meyerowitz.
Meyerowitz stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, we know Adam Sandler can act. He likes doing kind of family movies, and this is about a man trying to get home for Thanksgiving with his family. So I think he'd definitely do it. I think he'd, you know, he'd want to do a good performance, you know. And yeah, that's my pick.
All right. No, it's Adam Sandler, like Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, The Waterboy, and then just skip the rest of his career to Uncut Gems for me. But if honestly, I don't mind that pick. If I was going to, I haven't made my decision. If I go with Adam Sandler, I'm kind of thinking I would want it more of Punch Drunk Love Adam Sandler in this role, right? Because that's what I kind of see. Then you just kind of throw in, then you just kind of sprinkle in his little when he needs to be funny, just kind of that almost that yeah kind of sour, dour Adam Sandler. Then throw in a little bit more of his subdued stuff. Like I don't want just like how Steve Martin went. You know, Steve Martin, I wouldn't ever want
Adam Sandler to go. No, exactly. That's why I said I don't want his voices. And yeah, like you're kind of mentioning now that you think about it, like Steve Martin, like he's funny in Planes and Trains, Automobiles, but he's not really working to be funny, you know? Where like, right. You know, he's just, you know, he's just saying the lines and they just come out funny because of the writing and how he's acting it. But I wouldn't say he's giving
a comedic and reacting to John Candy.
I wouldn't say he's giving a comedic performance. I just think he's giving a performance that ends up being funny in certain situations. I think Sandler can pull that off.
Yes. Yes.
Definitely. I think Sandler is at his best because I like the comedies that everyone likes at this, but I like him when he's actually a human being in movies.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I'm one of the only people that likes Spanglish because I think he's legitimately good in it. I like the Meyerowitz stories. I thought he was really good in that. And it pisses me off because, and I'm like, I get it. You want to do one of your vacation movies with your friends and you want them to get paid. I get it. Whatever. But do more of them. I shouldn't have to wait. Like Meyerowitz stories and Uncut Gems. There's like a period. There's like some time between them. And I'm like, do one a year or whatever. You know, or not one a year, but like one every other year. Like you shouldn't have, there shouldn't be that much gap. That's not that much space between them. Like Rain Over Me, that was like early 2000s. And he's really good in that too. And it drives me crazy because I'm like, you can do this every time if you wanted to. And you don't want to. You choose to do, Adam Sandler, yeah. Ridiculous Six bullshit. So if you're picking that Adam Sandler, then I'm not.
I'm picking kind of what we've been talking about and like
yeah
and what I've said, you know, kind of, you know, I think Taika Waititi, he can get, like, I think when you get a good director like that, someone who's capable of getting good performances from people, like you've seen in Uncut Gems with the Safdie brothers, I think Waititi can get that performance that we need for this film, like not the usual Adam Sandler shtick. Like, gotcha. I think we can get and like, you know, otherwise, you know, this is just like a Dennis Dugan film. If you got Adam Sandler doing his normal thing, who directed all of his latest terrible films, pretty much. So
no, I like both picks to a certain extent, but I've got to go with Sailor here with Lee Byung-hun. I really like him. And I think that I would want him in a good American movie, not Terminator Genesis, where it's trash,
or G.I. Joe, either, or Red 2,
or any of those that
Red 2 ain't bad.
What?
I like,
but Red nobody 2. Cares about it. That's what
no,
I'm.
No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind this guy becoming a. I don't think he's going to be a household name, but I would like, you know, coming off of Squid Game. He may be like, hey, the star or star of Squid Game. Okay, that would probably pull people into my movie. So, and I think it does kind of line up with what I was going to go with, which I'll kind of give my rundown after we do all these picks of who my cast. But so I kind of like that. So point Sailor. We are tied going into the Del Griffith pick, which is played by, of course, John Candy. Started Spaceballs, The Great Outdoors, and Uncle Buck. So we're going to go back to Duke this time. Duke, who's your Del Griffith?
Okay. Well, I kind of hinted at that when I said I wanted to go with kind of Hollywood pairs that we were familiar with. So, of course, I picked Adam Sandler for my Steve Martin or the Neil Page role. And so I'm going to pair him up with Kevin James, who, of course, we know from on that. Hitch is probably my favorite role he's in. And together, back when, of course, I had Sandler in the running, they've done I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, Grown Ups, Pixels. So I thought that would have been a good pair, but I think Kevin James kind of on his own would fill that John Candy role. I think, you know, he's done comedies. He's done some drama. Lately, he's kind of been moving into different genres, like the action thriller Becky, which I haven't seen
Isn't
yet.
Isn't he like a skinhead or something in
that? I have no clue.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I remember him getting at least, I think they were like, hey, at least he's doing something different. So I kind of wanted that. Like, I don't want, like, again, I'm kind of going, I want Kevin James, but I don't want like Paul Blart Mall Cop Kevin James.
Right.
I want like.
Oh, give me an example of a good Kevin James.
I kind of want like, you know, King of Queens. I want Hitch, where he's kind of like the lovable guy.
I think he's really good. And Here Comes the Boom.
I haven't seen that one yet.
He's really good. I'm not saying that's the greatest movie, but that's probably his most where he's kind of showing a little bit more of a range in certain parts.
Okay. Yeah. No, and I kind of want like, and I want him like, I'd give him like a little bit of a beard kind of to differentiate, like kind of like, you know, John Candy.
He's great in Hitch.
John Candy. Yeah. I love him in Hitch. Like that's kind of what I want for Hitch, you know, kind of like that lovable, like he's smart. You can tell like he's smart at his job. He's
legitimately good in Hitch.
He's terrible at getting a girlfriend, but then he does it. And that's what I kind of want. I want like someone like, I think Kevin James can get that kind of lovable puppy like we were talking about with John Candy, where he's kind of.
Well, with the John Candy, the biggest thing for me, you know, and I, you know, maybe I should have said this before we got into the picks, but for me is you have to sell it, the I like me speech. Like, I think you have to have that person that can sell that speech, because that's where you are like, all right, yeah, I wanted to punch this guy in the throat 5 seconds earlier, but now I'm on Del Griffith. I am Team Dale.
You want to hurt me? Go right ahead if it makes you feel any better. I'm an easy target. Yeah, you're right. I talk too much. I also listen too much. I could be a cold-hearted cynic like you. But I don't like to hurt people's feelings. Well, you think what you want about me. I'm not changing. I like me. My wife likes me. My customers like me. Because I'm the real article. What you see is what you get.
You know, you have to have somebody that can sell that.
If that's what you're looking for, I think Kevin James can do that, because I'm pretty sure he did something similar to that in Hitch. So. Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't.
I don't think I need to say anything more. I think Kane's liking what I'm.
If you put Lee Byung-hun in a movie with Kevin James, I swear to God, I will quit this podcast. God damn it! Are you sure you do not want to pick Jack Black? It's not.
No, I like Kevin James.
I like him.
Like, you know, Kevin, like I'm trying to picture Jack Black right now. And then you're talking about Due Date. And I know Zach Galifianakis in Due Date's got like the long, that was when he had longer hair and a beard. And I'm just thinking like, they look too similar. Like, it's like Jack Black kind of looks like.
Well, that's back when Zach Galifianakis was in Zach Galifianakis mode. Now I think he would be great, because he's actually transitioned into a really good dramatic actor. I think Jack Black can do anything. And he's in it's undeniably entertaining and charismatic and
oh likeable. I almost had Jack Black for our Weekend at Bernie's Patreon episode, shameless plug again, that's going to be coming out soon, I think. Awesome. But I didn't go with them, so I like Jack Black. I would like Jack Black to do kind of more serious work, like less comedies, more Like I like him in D Train. He's done some really good.
Remember when Jack Black was like the role player in action movies in like the 90s, like The Jackal and Enemy of the State and stuff.
Yeah, he just popped up and shit. I think he's in the background of like Demolition Man or
something. Isn't that crazy?
It's fucking Jack Black, and he's like in 2 seconds of Mars Attacks. You're like, that's Jack Black. Ooh. Jack Black is in this.
That's nuts.
It's
so weird.
It's.
Like, was it? Yeah, I wonder if he wanted, like, was he just, was it just, I'm going to take any job I can get, or I want to be part of the action genre, or that's hilarious.
I think it was a case of like quantity over quality. He's like, I just, y'all going to give me $200 per diem and free catering? free food.
Did you see his great turn as Augie in Airborne 1993?
No,
with starring Seth the great Shane McDermott, and has Seth Green in it.
I don't remember that movie.
I can say that
I remember him as the asshole bully in Never Ending.
Well, he's kind he's a jerk in Airborne too. He's kind of a bully, and the main guy is like, he's kind of your typical like surfer kind of sounding guy, and he says bra. He's like, hey, bro. And he's like, dude, did you just call me a female underwear
skateboarding
park?
Movie?
That's all I remember from that movie.
Is it that skateboarding
I think it's
movie?
Got some skateboarding or something in it. Because he comes, like, I think he's supposed to be like a surfer or something.
Inline skating.
Yeah, it's like, because I think he's like from like the beach or something. And he comes to like middle America type of place. And yeah, it's a... great.
And he's that Rastafarian, and I Know What You Did Last Summer too. He dies and shit. Oh, Jack Black.
He's in Dead Man. For crying out loud. What a career.
What a career. Jack Black.
The Fan. He worked with Michael Mann. That's nuts.
That's insane. I'm also, before we get into my pick, fun fact about Here Comes the Boom. It's probably one of his better roles because in college, Kevin James was a hell of a fucking wrestler. So much so that Mick Foley, Mankind, said he was the best wrestler he ever went up against. So, because I believe they went to the same college or some shit together. So,
interesting.
It's just, there was a time when Kevin James could actually legitimately beat the shit out of you. And that time was a long, long time ago.
All he needs is one Marvel role, and they'll get him. They'll get him that
go.
Six.
There you go. All right. Sailor, give me your Dell pick.
Kevin Feige is chomping at the bit to get fucking Kevin James. All right. Well, if I'm going, but I mean, this is the predictable route, but you know, it is what it is. If I'm going with Bong Joon-ho, well, then I got to go with his number one boy, and that's Kang Ho Song, who's in almost all of his movies. The Host, Memories of Murder, Snowpiercer, Parasite. He is the lead of Parasite, if you've seen that movie. He is the guy that doesn't speak English in Snowpiercer, because I don't think he can speak English. The man can do anything. Just based on those four movies, where he is like a hardened detective on the edge, Memories of Murder, who has like literally no funny scenes in. The Host, who's it's a sad scene watching him lose his sister / daughter. I can't remember who gets kidnapped by the thing, because it's been a while since I've seen it, but I know he was responsible for her, and he looks back and the monster took her. And then like 10 minutes later, he's like doing some goofball shit, and you're like, but you never lose sympathy for him. Like, it's crazy. And then you have like Parasite, where he's trying to keep his family together, but then he also has like funny moments and shit. Like, it's kind of crazy. So if you need that lovable asshole who's going to throw the monkey wrench in the plans,
he's good at playing a loser type of,
he's very good at playing a loser that you want to win more than anything. That's it. But basically his story arc in Parasite. He's a loser, and you're like, God damn it, I just want you to get one win. Just one win, and it's the world just keeps shitting on him, but he keeps trying. He keeps trying, and that's John Candy. He keeps – the world can't break him, but it's really trying. And he's like, no, I'm just going to keep doing me. So if you've seen those four movies, that's basically it. There's other shit. He's been in a lot of a lot of stuff. Apparently he was in The Interview. I don't remember that, but I'm going with those four because they're relevant to this discussion. King Ho Song, huge fan of his. So I think that's my John Candy.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I like the pick. I definitely see where you were going with the whole thing. I can see him playing that role, but you know, especially playing off of Lee Byung. Who's that? Hoon? Yeah. Playing off of Lee really well. So I like that pick. I really like that pick. You got anything about that, Duke? About that pick?
No, I would have seen him in Snowpiercer, but I'm not familiar.
You never saw Parasite?
It's on my I got so much on my watch list that
you haven't seen The Host?
No. What is
watch literally any movie from fucking Bong Joon-ho, he's in all of them, and they're all fucking great. I don't think he's in Okja. I think that's the only movie
Parasite. It's probably
the worst movie he's
made. Parasite will be the next one I watch. If Parasite would have been on a streaming service before we did whatever year Saw Wars, shameless plug again, I would have watched it, but it wasn't. So that it's, and then once it certain time passes, it's just on the watch list that I got you.
But if all right, rent it, and if you don't like it, I will
Venmo you. I got friends that love Parasite, so no, I'll definitely. It's on my list. Like I do want to watch it. It's just I got like.
It's the only. It's one of the only movies that won Best Picture. I'm like, yes, you finally did it.
Oh, I remember finally. When you thought everyone thought it was gonna be Joker, and you were like, holy shit, the Oscars actually picked the actual best pick.
I was so happy to eat crow. I was like, yes, because I voted for Joker. I thought Joker was going to win because I'm like, the Academy's never right. They're always fucking dumb. They're going to go with this because they want more viewers. And if they get Joker, because they know everyone saw that fucking movie. And I was pleasantly surprised that I was wrong because Parasite is a fucking masterpiece. And it's not what you think it is. Whatever you think it is, it's not that, and then it just keeps unfolding into something else that you don't think it's going to be. It's many genres, and it's one of the hardest movies for me to pitch to anyone because I'm like, it's a comedy kind of, with some twists, I guess.
Very dark comedy.
It's a very dark comedy, but it's still funny. You're still going to be laughing at it, and it's not at you're not laughing at it. You're laughing at like, God damn, this movie is just so perfectly constructed.
It really is. It's good. It's good. All right. Decision time. Let me see here what I got. So far I've gone with Taika Waititi as my director, Lee Byung-hun as my Neil. I like both these picks, honestly. And so what I'm thinking, I think I'm kind of going to combine what we're doing here. So I kind of like the, I'm trying to think of the opposites type of aspect here. And I think you can play on some of the maybe language and culture barriers. So I think I'm going to go with Kevin James as my Dale. I do think that would be kind of an interesting, more of it kind of combining a different take on it of instead of, just two annoying guys, you know, or two unlikable guys. It's like, you got one who could both be kind of unlikable in their way, but you have the culture kind of barrier and the language type of barrier that could play a factor there. And I think, you know, trying to see that in 2021, trying to see each other's point of view, that type of thing, and getting along, I think that would be a very, and I do think that Kevin James can deliver the I like me speech. I think he can hit that. I think he can, especially if you have a director who can pull out some decent performances. And I think Waititi can do that and structure the movie to really feed into that. So point to Duke, and Duke wins the movie.
Here's the thing. I'm not mad about it because since you didn't pick those, they're back in your deck. That does. Bong Joon-ho was not officially picked. I lose my Lee. I can't cast him for like 12 episodes, but Bong Joon-ho is banging my deck. There's a movie going to be out there with Kevin James and Lee Joon-ho. And It kind of boils my blood.
I could actually see this being like Netflix would like greenlit this to be like, okay, we got to get our Squid Game stars into new properties. What YTT's hot right now? Let's get him to direct, and then
ooh, we got
to
get that guy off that show that was canceled after
like. Well, yeah, they got the Kevin James, like the crew. Yeah,
oh my god, what a hit that was! Nobody watched that goddamn thing. No, what a fucking turd.
Netflix is becoming quite notorious for canceling all their shows now after being heralded previously.
Just hit it and quit it. And just move it on.
Here's the thing. They don't, if it's not a hit immediately, they have no incentive to keep going. So if it's not an Orange and New Black, they're like, oh, no one watched this? You're done. It's like, it's been out for 4 hours. It's like, you had your chance. Yeah. You had your chance.
James. Yeah. Well, anyway, we all know Netflix numbers are sketchy at best anyway. Like 100 million people have viewed the movie, and then asterisk, and then the asterisk at the bottom is like, watched at least 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, what was that, like, about Red Notice, like, or something?
You hover over like the movie tile on Netflix, and it starts playing the first 2 minutes of the movie anyway. So it's that's why I'm all
probably a lot of people rewatching it because they kept falling asleep during it.
Hey, Red Notice isn't the best movie, but it was enjoyable for what, you know.
Okay. Now I want that Canadian rating scale. Not the best. What is it? A B plus?
I'd give it a B plus, yeah.
Oh my Jesus gosh, Christ. It is so not Jesus a B plus. Christ. Jesus.
It's like, what are you expecting from a Dwayne Johnson movie?
I'm moving all of my picks back to Sailor.
I don't rank on quality. I rate on on enjoyment. So if I'm enjoying the movie and I'm like, I might rewatch again, it's gonna get a better review. I don't think it was that enjoyable.
You said not the best.
Well, like, not the best is like, you know, like the dialogue. It's all been done before in previous films, but I liked Ryan Reynolds and Dwayne Johnson's little back and forth.
It was a bit much, but all right. So I like my movie here. So all right. So here's, you want to hear my picks?
Yep. Okay. Me and Sailor are now behind the desk, and you are coming towards us to pitch your movie. So let's hear it. We're not Harvey Weinstein. We're gonna say
I'm completely.
Oh no.
There's no pretense. Hey. Well, this is happening. Hey, Woody Allen. Let's go. What you got?
Oh no! you guys bring up in every episode.
We got
every episode.
Oh no!
All right. So you guys want to hear my cast, my picks?
So show us what you got.
All right. So for my directors, I got two directors here. I went with Tyler Nielsen and Michael Schwartz. They directed Peanut Butter Falcon. Uh-oh. I like their style. You know, it was a fun movie. It was kind of a road trip type movie, but it had a lot. Of course, it had so much heart, so much heart. So I think that'd be a good little project for them. You know, kind of.
And this is exactly what I want them to do, because that's the type of movie I'm amazed somebody didn't pick up.
Yeah,
because that's exactly what Colin Trevorrow did. He made that one small little indie, and now he's making fucking Star Wars and shit. I'm like, no, stay in this realm, and then once you have a body of work, then if you want to go the Ryan Coogler route, do that. But yeah, I think Planes, Trains, I think that'd be a good career.
Yeah, and very surprised. I mean, because they did that in 2019, and I think the only thing that they have lined up that I'm aware of is like a TV miniseries or something. So I'd like to see them make some more movies for sure.
I mean, miniseries route is, I mean, it's,
I mean, I don't know anything about it. Like, I don't know what it is, what if it's a Netflix or this or that, but I don't know too much into it. So all right, so that's my director. The for my Neil, so the Steve Martin guy, I didn't pick this guy, but it was the first one to pop in my head, and then it was like, okay, it's too obvious, but Jason Bateman. I think he's a good role, but he's already kind of done that. But I settled on John Cho, the Searching, Star Trek. Those, you know, because I know he's not exactly straight up. I think he's Korean. I think he's Korean. Yeah. So I was kind of thinking that the cultural thing. So that's why I kind of went with that as kind of the back and forth. And so for my Dell, I wanted to go a little bit older than my Neil picked. I did, because they're pretty much the same age in the original. So I kind of wanted a little bit more of a guy who we kind of talk about. We don't have a lot of actors like this that isn't, you know, good looking and all that kind of stuff is kind of that character, that certain look, but can kind of, because I think with Dale, if he's Kevin Hart or Will Smith, whichever one, you know, the thing that played into Dale's, even though they don't make fun of his look, it's not like a gag or a punch, but his look kind of adds to all the annoying stuff that he's doing, right? Because if he's Brad Pitt, you're not, okay, this is not that annoying, that kind of stuff. So I kind of wanted to go with that type of actor, so I went with Paul Giamatti.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I think he can definitely do comedy. He can definitely do the, you know, the back and forth, and kind of, I think he could be annoying and do all the little quirks that Dell does. But you want to talk about somebody that's going to punch you in the gut when he does the I like me or the reveal about the dead wife, that Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, I could see that.
I like that. You know who else would be, who's just, when you started going in your little preamble, Cameron Britton.
Yeah.
Mindhunter. I think he could, because he's also got that size, and that could be a fun little. And yeah, it's literally that line. That's what you're casting. You want somebody that could, yeah, I like me. And then you're like, God damn it. Tears up.
Yeah.
I hated you before, but now I like you too now.
I thought Paul Walter Hauser, but I'd already picked him, which I could probably.
I thought of him for a bit.
I think he's one of those that can definitely, he's exactly that part, but I'd already picked him. So, but I do like Paul Giamatti a lot, and I know he's doing stuff, but I kind of miss him. Before Sailor sends us home, Duke, well, I want to thank you for joining us. You got anything you want to plug or shout out?
Yeah. So otherwise you can find me on Screen Age Wasteland, where I'm writing news, trailers, and the occasional review. Screen Age Wasteland is our volunteer-driven community hub. It's where we run on discuss comments, and we all kind of do this in our spare time. This is what we like, talking movies, and the place where we used to talk about movies got they kicked out the discuss comments, so we decided to just create our own website, and I like to think it's thriving. I mean, this is how I met Sailor and Kane, and hey, so far we're having fun, and well, it keeps being fun. I think we'll keep doing it. So yeah, check us out on Screen Age Wasteland. And otherwise, thanks for having me, guys. And I'll see you for the Back to the Future episode. I'm sure.
No, that's it's a fun community, Screen Age Wasteland. You know, we wouldn't have this podcast if it wasn't for that that site. And you know, Duke does a great job. I would say he's our, I don't throw out compliments quite a bit, but especially to Duke, but I would say he's our backbone. he drives a lot of the scheduling and editing, and it's a lot of the content.
I like to think of myself as a subtle manager, where I just kind of gently remind people, hey,
are you going to have this in on time?
Yeah, Sailor's good. Sailor, I will admit, when Sailor likes to tell me all the time, if I tell you it's going to be ready on Monday, it's ready on Monday. And it usually is. I don't have a problem. Sailor will hand it in.
He's never broken a deadline. That my films I saw is 4 months behind, but that's my deadline to break. I never told anyone when the fuck. I just kept it to my deadline. I just also, you know, didn't want to write anymore. But it will eventually. I will.
Or the occasional time when you forget what time it is for Monsoon Vision.
Yeah,
I mean, it is what it is.
Everybody, if you like Sane Kane's rambles, you got to come Sunday 9 p.m. EST. Sailor usually will host. We'll watch a cheesy old school VHS movie, and we'll comment. So you got to make a discuss account. But you know, we just roast it and we point out stuff we like, and it's a blast. So I'd also plug that and just say, hey, come check that out. And also, if you want to support the podcast, the website, since we're doing this, we're using our own money to fund the site and any fees. We do have a Red Bubble account, which some original artwork by Bob Graham, and some graphics that our main tech guy, Al Alvarez, made. So Google Saw Wasteland or Screen Age something, or go to our website. We have a link to our shop, and buy a t-shirt, buy a mug, and support what we do, because we're growing, baby. The future is bright.
Future is bright. All right, send us home, Sailor.
That's our cast. If you agree or disagree, hit us up on Screen Age Wasteland, like Duke said, or you can vote on whether or not Kane made the right decision over at Total Recast Podcast on Instagram. If you want to hear even more episodes, send us some corn over at Patreon. That's our episode. I'm Sailor, he's Kane, and this has been Duke.
Hey.
This has been Total Recast. We remake movies, so Hollywood won't. Till next time.